Welcome to Conversations Around Conversations about the conversations we just had on the Clubhouse app earlier today. I am Jess, CEO and co-founder of Broadway Unlocked.
And I'm Joe, co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. This is Tech Theater, Clubhouse Conversations. It's a podcast where we continue the conversation started on Clubhouse because every Tuesday at 12:55 Eastern, come on and hang out if you're around. We have these really, really awesome discussions with super brilliant people who sit at the intersection of tech and theater.
We always walk away from those Clubhouse talks with so many thoughts, and so we decided to share those with y'all in this podcast. We wanted to reach even more of our friends and collaborators and keep talking about the incredible concepts we hit on during our Clubhouse. So with that, welcome to Tech Theater Tuesdays. Devoted listeners of the podcast will know that a couple of weeks ago, our associate producer, Natalie Renfro, joined me on the podcast to talk about planning our then upcoming show at the historic Waldorf Astoria in New York City. Well, that show, featuring the Ladies of Freestyle Love Supreme Academy, was last night. It happened. And now Joe's back from vacation, and he and I are going to talk about it and hopefully run down some really helpful stuff for you all as you are thinking about hybrid events and the intersection of in-person and digital audience members. But very first, I just wanted to roll through a couple of analytics from last night that we thought were really exciting. So we had about 50 people in person with us at the Waldorf. It's a kind of a small space, which was perfect for what we were doing. We had 99% of people show up. We only had one person, I think, that had responded that they were going to come, not show up. So that was amazing. But even more exciting than that was what was going on in our digital venue, where we had 111 attendees, with five countries represented across those audience members: Canada, South Korea, Sweden, United Kingdom, and United States. I also happened to know someone was in there from Germany, funny enough, but I guess that didn't come up in the analytics.
VPNs, tricking the robots.
Maybe that's it, yep. Those attendees left 729 comments throughout the night in the venue, and my very, very favorite stat from this is that the in-person audience members spent about 2.5 hours with us from top to bottom, and so did the digital attendees. That's crazy. That's just like freaking crazy and really, really exciting. So that's all to frame up, I think, what will be a really cool conversation today. Joe, you sort of mentioned this in Clubhouse, and I thought it was a great jumping off point for something I wanted to ask you anyway. Which is that we've been talking conceptually about this world for a really long time, and you've never actually gotten to be a part of it. And I was hoping that today we actually could roll down the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, in terms of what you learned, what you saw, what you think about this sort of future that we've been building with the company from having experienced it for the very first time.
Yeah. And to maybe even frame up a little better what I said on Clubhouse, which was that with the Give Back concert, sort of the precursor in many ways to this Live at the Waldorf event series that Broadway Unlocked is now doing, I hadn't actually ever attended one of those. Like, they have been going on since 2013, and I never had the luxury to be part of one. And so for the past 18 months, it's all been a concept. It's all been a theory to me. It's all been this thing, this mythical place, this Valhalla of events. And so I got to experience my first Broadway Unlocked hybrid, blended, in-person and digitally extended experience, and it did not disappoint.
Well, it would be a very different podcast if it did.
I know. Right? but in the Clubhouse conversation, I sort of continued that line of thought of like, oh my God, it was amazing to have gone from talking about this thing, from conceptualizing and visualizing, executing the digital version and getting really damn good at doing virtual events, mm-hmm. and fully digital events where you're kind of, you know, struggling a bit to break down the barriers that we have because we are only seeing each other through screens, and how important it is to give people ways to interact with each other and points of agency throughout virtual space so that they feel, that's the audience feels like they're actually somewhere and they're actually doing something and they're not just watching a screen. And it's been sort of a core part of our ethos as a company. And so to now actually get back in person and to have the two experiences and to feel the visceral in-person part of it and how that part connects through to the virtual and the digital experience and those audiences and then back the other direction and sort of the bridges between these two audiences and what sort of tactics and tricks and strategies and things that we had done across this event to actually foster that connection. And it just still blows my mind. I'm really excited today to actually watch back the digital recording of the event because it was different than what I experienced in person. Like everyone, these 111 people who joined us virtually, they all got a slightly more tailored, catered, kind of custom created experience for them and for their environment because it was inherently different than the one that I was in, which was in person with screens and people and amplifiers and other things. So the difference between those two and how they're sort of thoughtfully crafted depending on your environment, and then like, yeah, the crossing over, the blending of those experiences was something that I was really excited to see and to now get to talk about, to get to think about, like, okay, what worked? What didn't work? What do we want to do more of? What did it feel isolating in there? I want to talk to more people digitally and how they felt about the crossover. Like, I think that intersection of those two audiences is where I'm really excited.
Can we actually start at something you said a second ago, which is the different... watching different things as two different audiences, because that was actually brand new. We've never done that before. And it's like sort of a product, just as a quick frame up for you all listening, really a product of a different tech setup, where in the years past in the Give Back concert that Joe's talking about, everything was like all the tech was in, all the cameras were installed in a space. They were hardwired into physical servers that were, and then a live switch, you know, suite that was actually switching on premise, which allowed us as an in-person audience to watch the same, what we call line cut, as the digital audience was watching. And because this was bringing all the tech in from outside into the Waldorf and switching it through a cloud live streaming service, there's latency, which basically it means a delay, right? There's just like a little bit of a delay that did not allow us to show the same thing in the in-person room as in the virtual room. And that sort of set off this domino effect of like having to design different layouts and like how to embrace that, oh shit, we can't do that moment, and turn it into what I hope is a superpower. I'm still trying to work through it. So I'm really curious, like, not only to see what you thought about having those two different experiences, but like what you think the potentials of that are and maybe the downfalls of it as we like look to the future and start getting to make a decision about whether we want the same cut in person and virtually, or if we want to embrace two different experiences and sort of utilize that.
Yeah. I mean, keeping with one of the themes of this podcast, my under-informed but really strong instinct is that they're different worlds and they should be treated and catered to differently. And like how that gets executed and you know, the sort of the challenges that we have with latency being potentially a really helpful innovation, a forcing mechanism to actually go this direction and create a, you know, let's hope, better experience for the digital attendees. Which again brings me back around to like, okay, well, they can't be completely separate experiences even if they're different. And so how are we, you know, crossing over that barrier of latency and connecting the two audiences in a way that feels, you know, organic and kinetic and lets me as, you know, an attendee in either place feel, see, and you know, yeah, I feel like I'm connected to the other audience, because we don't want the two audiences to feel like they're others to each other.
Totally. And I think that was one of the, like, we were talking about Stanley and Clubhouse asked us for aha moments, and I actually hadn't thought of this, but like that was another aha moment for me, having the benefit of like been through a bazillion of these and ending up in this situation where it was very, very, this particular aspect was incredibly different from anything we'd done, is at the Give Back concert, there's definitely this feeling that you're, as an in-person, we've done all this work to make digital audiences not feel like second-class citizens, right? But at the Give Back concert, the fact that you're watching the same, a line cut that's really being made for a screen, gives a sense of feeling like a studio audience. And we've always said that, Jermaine and I talk about it all the time. And it's like kind of, it was like kind of a fun, cool, different thing for us. Oh, this is like a studio audience.
Yeah, I feel like it's a term I've learned to parrot without fully understanding what it means. I'm like, yeah, it's kind of like a studio audience.
It's when you get, like when you get tickets to go watch Bill Maher, right? Like, yeah. Or you get to watch a taping.
My brain goes to America's Funniest Home Videos.
Sure, sure. Yes, of course. But But what was really neat about having to design and use the screens and the space differently outside of the interactive moments, because let's just put those in a pocket. Those were very similar to the way we do it in the Give Back, have always done it in the Give Back concert. But everything outside of those interactive moments, being able to design layouts and use those screens, for instance, to put interpreters up on, actually took away, like, in a really good way. It didn't feel like a studio audience. To your point you made a couple of minutes ago, like, it felt like just two different shows for two different audiences, mm-hmm. which I actually really liked.
Can we get into some of the specifics about some of the executions? Because I want to talk about the interpreters, because mm-hmm. that was one of the coolest parts of this show.
Cool. Oh my God.
And I feel like we're still getting feedback from people being like, that was the coolest.
Yeah.
Like, how, what, huh? So I'll do my best, and please fill in.
Okay.
In the gaps. But we had the amazing ladies of Freestyle Love Supreme Academy, four women up on stage, all...
Five.
I was going to get to Janet.
Oh, sorry.
So four women being interpreted, because they were all part of the show in the sense that they were, singing and freestyling. And then there was another woman playing piano and
scooped you.
Contributing. So we had four interpreters, one for each of the ladies that were freestyling and playing the improv games up on stage. And one of those, Kayla Malady, I was trying to remember her name. Kaiser Rose, is a beatboxer, like an incredible beatboxer, a world-renowned, world-champion beatboxer who, just go Google her and listen to things. It's absurd.
Seriously.
But how do you interpret a beatboxer? And we learned how you interpret a beatboxer. It's a lot of energy and movement and motions and looking like drum playing. I don't know if new things were invented to do this. Like, I want to talk to that woman who is interpreting for Kayla. It was so cool. And she was up on screen. And so anytime that Kayla was sort of isolated or soloed in the show, the digital monitor that was up next to her had the interpreter up and full screened. And you could now be sort of seeing and understanding what was going on. And that was a different experience than what was happening in the virtual venue, which was, those two up side by side. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was just a really amazing experience to be able to see. And it made it almost more fun, more enjoyable. There was more to interact with, to engage with, to watch, to get excited about, to kind of like lose your mind over. Did I miss anything with that? I'm trying to think of like other elements of how it was laid out. Or,
well, I actually, one, want to add in, just so y'all know, they didn't rehearse with the women. And this is a fully improvised show. So like, that also blew my fucking mind. Like, they just showed up at 7:20 and then we're like, no, it's cool. We got this. We'll just interpret this crazy shit that's happening on stage. That was amazing.
That is amazing. I would love to like hear from someone. So as someone who doesn't know ASL, like, how spot on was it? Like, mm-hmm. how easy or difficult was it to follow? Because it's like kind of hard to follow sometimes, just like the improv hip hop element of it.
As
like,
a hearing person,
As a hearing person. So I'd be so curious to hear, like, was it successful? Was it just fun and crazy? Like,
totally. And then also, let me grab my phone because I don't want to misquote her, but Angela was sending me some messages yesterday.
Angela Johnson of Invest in Access, our amazing partner who helps to provide ASL interpreters for our shows.
Yeah. Check them out. They're amazing. Oh my God. They're amazing. So Angela Johnson was sending me messages and she said, fantastic job with the production logistics. No one is doing that yet. That being, I think, the way that we crossed virtual interpreters and live in-person performances. I've been contacted by two teams in recent weeks, one national, one New York local, and the national decided that ASL virtual would be too hard. You're the only team that's executed this well. Four tracks, brilliant, and freestyle no less, which is like an amazing compliment. Hard one, because Angela has incredibly exacting standards, which is why we work with her. But also, it was not fucking hard. What a cop-out. I mean, maybe I'm just being unfair and we just know so much about this, but like, it's not that hard. There's people to ask. You're paying all these people to mill around and do nothing at these in-person events, because G was talking about that to us yesterday. Like, hire a consultant who knows what they're doing. Call us. Like, whatever. It wasn't hard.
What like, maybe not to give away our trade secrets, but how was it structured? Like, what were we sending to the interpreters? Maybe even back a step. What are we capturing that gets sent to the interpreters that they are then interpreting, that then gets captured, that then gets ported back into the space? Like, it's a bunch of steps. And it doesn't need to be hard, but like, I don't know how to do it. How does it happen?
Yeah, I think there's like really, there's three, I think, piece like ingredients in this pie that makes it not that hard.
Ooh, let's go, Julia Child.
Your favorite topic. The first is, you know, giving the, well, this is freestyle specific, giving the interpreters as much information as you can ahead of time, right? So for freestyle, since it's improvised, that's not a huge amount.
Scripts, right? We give them scripts of all the improvisations.
Exactly. We sent all of the pre-recorded videos over that we had done, like, before the show, so they could pre-watch them. We sent over all of Anissa's bullets that she had, so at least we knew the games that were going to be played. We knew a little bit of the interconnectivity tissue for, I don't know, three moments where they needed to talk about fundraising, right? So we just got all of that over to the interpreters early. So number one, get everything to the interpreters early. Number two, just design layouts for the feed that incorporate the interpreters in a way that is creative and artistic and like fits them into the broadcast. I actually think, you know, with a system like vMix, which is, I think, probably the most widely used live streaming system in the United States right now, it is incredibly simple to go into Illustrator or Canva. We even did ours in Canva this time around, and create 1920 by 1080 layouts with just boxes and imagine what you want your screen to look like, right? So that the interpreters are sort of like clearly correlated with the people they're interpreting. They're on screen. You hand those to your tech director and you get layouts designed. So creatively approaching the broadcast layout is step number two. And then three is feeding them, you know, the stage as it's happening. So they're what they were doing, right? They're in our live streaming system. They're watching the performance in real time and just interpreting, and they're going into their boxes and the layouts that we designed. That's like literally it. This was the hardest of situations for an interpreter, I feel like, because of the freestyling and the improvisation. It's not super complicated.
And that's kind of brilliant that because we're using a system like vMix, that they can just join right in that. And it's not about capturing video, then porting it out to the interpreters, capturing them somehow, and then putting that back into the broadcast. It's like, let's just cut all those steps out. Have everyone in one big Brady Bunch style vMix session and go on with it.
Which honestly, you could technically do in any kind of live streaming. That's just like the constraint, or the, it's not a constraint. It's a setup of live streaming systems. It's just that some of them, like StreamYard, are more restrictive in your layout capacity, which does actually make having interpreters a little more difficult, or just like not as good looking and clear on screen, I suppose.
Very cool. So there you have it. No more excuses, anyone.
Seriously.
Get those interpreters in there. And I kind of love the idea breaking down the potential barrier to, you know, is it more expensive to have someone in person? If you're in a smaller market, are there just fewer potential interpreters, or at least fewer interpreters that match up with the person that they are attempting to interpret? Mm-hmm. And now being able to access a wider net of interpreters because you can bring them in digitally.
Yeah, I agree. And I loved having the interpreters up on the screen in our in-person space. It would have been, at the Waldorf, too cluttered, too hard to place everybody. Then the cameras, also camera placement would have gotten complicated. But like, it's that thing that you always say, which is turning a weakness into a superpower. You know, we were like, okay, we have to have these interpreters. I just really loved it. I loved how it all turned out. So what else was on your mind? What did you learn? What new ideas were sparked? What in this process was like way harder than you thought?
I have one thing that's been sticking with me that I haven't fully thought through, but that's what podcasts are for. That as a in-person attendee, and I think this is one part because part of my role last night was to be interacting with the other humans in the room, was actually I felt rather isolated from the virtual audience. Mm-hmm. And there were very thoughtfully incorporated moments where we got to engage with and interact with a handful of people that were coming in digitally. But I never felt the breath of those 111 people that were in the virtual venue, mm-hmm. and that we're chatting 790 times or whatever. Also, I did the quick math on that. It's like 6.5 chats per person. That's great. It's a lot of interaction. Totally. I love it. So feeling slightly isolated from those people, and like, how could I have been more connected? You know, if I had my phone, what might I have done with it? Didn't have my phone at the time, everyone. It was great. Put down your phone for 2 hours a week. It's amazing. So feeling slightly isolated from that audience and wanting to know what they're saying in those chats, wanting to know what they're engaging with, wanting to know what they like and all of that, and to be able to participate with them and allow everyone in that room to be able to participate and sort of, yeah, those bridges back and forth. And I feel like that's where the biggest opportunity is and what I'm most excited about playing with.
Yeah, I was thinking about that this morning too. There was a lot of stuff that this whole show is an exercise in letting good things go, you know, that we just like couldn't get done. And I was thinking in particular about this piece of it. I even thought, like, we never got to talk to our staff that was in the virtual venue. Like, we have this whole year, right? Like, ending the night in Slack, in our production chat, saying, great show. And that's part of just how it has to change. And, you know, we had stuff we needed to take care of and in the in-person room that, and like you said, we just like could not have phones out or we would not have been doing our jobs well. But I like missed that a lot. But on the audience side, for instance, I wanted a cutaway in the opening credits sequence when we said an audience members from the Waldorf and All Together Now Virtual to when it was at the Waldorf, cut to the audience cam, but we lost the audience cam because it turned out to be a butt cam. And I wanted to...
Wait, which one was the audience cam?
Oh, the piano cam was originally set up to be like over Janet's shoulder, like a yes. two-shot to the mm-hmm. audience, but it turned out to just capture everyone's butts.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Jess, classic creeper.
It worked in my head. So that was like gone. And then, you know, in a world where we would have had more time and have done this more, like I wanted a screen share so that cropped to just the chat so that when they said the All Together Now virtual venue, we just saw the chats flying in there. But it's actually really technical and hard to do. And we like, it was just, it had to be deep of all the things that we had to get done that day. Mm-hmm. It had to be deprioritized. The other thing that I really missed, and this is part of like that good, bad and ugly thing. And that I think will be really important as we move forward, is like not talking about how much we raised and naming donors, which is a thing we do all the time, mm-hmm. right? But the truth of the matter is marketing was much harder for this show than we thought. And I was really worried that we weren't going to raise very much.
Mm. So consciously left out
very
those
consciously
from the show where
100%.
We would be like, oh, look at this. A whole bunch of new donations. Shout out that person. Those are really fun moments.
They are.
A really good way to cross over. Like, hey, there's these hundreds of other people that have just donated that are coming in from the internet. Did you forget that they were there? Because they're there.
Yeah, totally.
And they matter just as much.
Yeah, and even just seeing that, our partners at Pledge, which we use to do the text to donate number, like even seeing that page as those names are populating is actually really important. I just was too scared that... we weren't going to have enough people donating. Turned out to not be true. It was awesome. We raised a good amount of money, but I think that has a huge amount to do with feeling that two-way communication, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we will obviously come back and talk to y'all about what we have dreamed up in between now and, you know, the next time we do this, which is in September.
Yeah.
As a fundraiser for the Actors Fund.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited.
Yeah. I'm really happy that we get... basically, like another crack at it real soon.
Mm-hmm.
It's like putting all of the good learnings and the good experiences and the visceral connection to it, you know, going from that theoretical into the visceral and actually now being able to do it again. And not just like, oh, yeah, that was fun. Moving on to the next thing.
Yeah, and I might just like, yes, and that for everyone listening, if you're thinking about doing this stuff, I think that what Joe just talked about is really, really important. Last night wasn't perfect. There's, as we just said, a bunch of stuff we just didn't even get to do that actually we consider really important, like core components of blending audiences that we just like flat out didn't get to do. We had never been in that space before. And I feel like I learned a ton about, a better way to use the Waldorf space for the in-person attendees.
How to set up cameras to capture people's butts.
No, we got that one fixed before the show, thankfully. It's really important to do this again, you know, like just even if it doesn't, it's not everything you just were expecting the first time, do it again. Learn and iterate just like with anything else, because there's a ton of potential in this and it's really exciting. And when you go through and read all of the chats in the virtual venue from our venue last night, people felt so connected and valued and grateful to be together. And that was the same general sentiment from everyone that was in person. So I don't know. I would just say it's really important to do it again, to try again and keep just learning about this new frontier.
Yeah. And I do, on that front of learning and experimenting, I can't think of a better first partner for us than Freestyle Love Supreme Academy.
Yeah.
And just how wonderful and gracious with like all of them were with their time and their energy and their talents. And their openness to being like, cool, let's see what happens.
So true.
But they were down to experiment mm-hmm. and to be comfortable with the things potentially going wrong and mm-hmm. the little hiccups here and the innovations there. And
which if they weren't, I'd be very concerned for like a group that's founded on freestyling entire shows yeah. from scratch.
And that the other part too of like yeah. their show relies on audience interaction, audience participation.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a wonderful canvas to allow us to, okay, let's pull things in from the virtual audience. Let's pull things in from the in-person audience. Let's cross those audiences over through the lens of the actual show.
When I'm going to say his last name wrong, but when Anthony Veneziali and I were talking afterwards, who I just think is the smartest, most talented, he's so amazing. And he was like, how do we work? Can we do something else together? And I was like, oh my God, because you're right. Freestyle is like the perfect sort of avatar for, you don't need to put the Broadway show on the screen, right? You need the slightly different translation of it for the screen. And Freestyle's the perfect group to do that with us. Because as you said, like everything is made up and it relies heavily on audience interaction. Okay, so let's close this conversation with a game that my friend Nathan likes to play a lot, which is best and worst. What was the best part of the night for you? What was the worst part of the night?
Ooh, okay, so best part of the night. I mean, it's so lame, but it's just being in person with people again, mm-hmm. like, which is kind of like, it's slightly a side yeah. of the show itself.
Yeah, that's fine.
And like a little antithetical, but it was like, you know, the excitement of getting to cross more people off my bingo card of someone I met over the pandemic virtually and being able to like hug or high five that person in person. Looking at you, Giuliano Minguchi.
Did you high five a lot of people?
I had a couple of high fives.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I was feeling really energetic.
That's funny.
So that was definitely the high. And I think it was, yeah, one part sort of the pent up desire to be in person and interacting and yeah, building things with people. And that was really cool.
Awesome.
The low, I think, coming back to feeling isolated from the virtual audience, mm-hmm. which is funny how those two actually kind of work hand in hand. Mm-hmm. Maybe I got a little too excited about the in-person elements because mm-hmm. I was jonesing for them. But yeah, not feeling as connected as I would have liked to those 111 people that came and joined and were part of the experience. You know, they weren't another audience. They're just people that were in another room that I never found.
Yeah. Totally. Ooh.
What about you? Hmm. What are your thorns and roses, lows and highs?
Best was definitely when Noompal Kiazulu joined us, who's this incredible 21-year-old activist. Watching her get up on stage and talk about her activism and work as Anissa interviewed her, and then watching them construct a freestyle about her and Gabby. But really, this was the moment for me, was Noompal, and watching her watch them reflect back to her who she is and like celebrating that in this freestyle, and then taking one more step past that in the moment and thinking about being able to cut that video and put that video out afterwards, and for all of the little girls who are going to watch Noompal talk about her work and then watch that fucking freestyle about her being a bad bitch, you know what I mean, and what that little girl is going to walk away from that with, was like the perfect expression of what like I hope happens with this medium.
I cannot wait to see that cut of like, you know, this little 60-second thing of a conversation that turns into a freestyle that turns into a piece of social content that reaches millions of people on the internet and hopefully changes hearts and minds.
Yeah,
inspires people,
because you can't not, I mean, you just like can't be not be inspired by Noompal's work. She's insane, you know what I mean? And then by Anissa and all of those women who freestyled about her. So that was like definitely the best for me. I think really the worst was the same for me. I just, with the virtual audience, you know, this is like this is going to change a lot for me. I think our roles are going to start changing, right? And like, that's both great and hard, because when we're in person with other people, you know, like this, a curated group of folks, like I don't know how you felt, but I know like my job was to like fucking fundraise in that moment for us and get, meetings out of people and to make sure, because as my friend Nico said to me, fundraising for charity is such an unemotional process. And what we do is so centered around the emotion, the feeling of being an included audience member at something that's magic. This was like, these are our shots to be able to not just show you a spreadsheet and talk about it, but to like let you feel what it is and then like make sure that, you know, each of us is by someone's side when that moment, that light bulb goes off. And so like, I don't know, our jobs are just changing. And I'm not so worried about the broadcast and mixing the audiences because there's so much more we can do. And now with time and learning and all of that good stuff, I like feel really solid about being able to continue to iterate and bring the virtual audience into the broadcast. But I missed being in the chat during the show. And I missed being able to say goodbye to our staff afterwards and telling them they did an incredible job. And I missed, you know, going to fight a fire in the virtual venue. I really did.
I don't know if I missed that part.
No, I did. And I think while that's the worst for me of the evening, I also think it makes me really hopeful because that means I, as a human, it took 1 year for me to switch around. Do you know what I mean? And not prioritize the in-person experience and say nothing ever in reality beats being in person. It took 1 year for me to turn around and now be able to say, oh my God, I like legitimately missed being in the virtual venue.
Yeah, that is a nice sentiment to take away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like you said, it's not impossible to have those things, to have that meeting at the end of the day that we jump everyone on a video chat and the in-person and
totally.
The digital come together for 10 minutes to have a shot of mezcal and celebrate the win.
Totally. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. And I'm excited, too, that more of these events are going to be happening. Obviously, we're going to be putting on more, but they're just going to become more common. The ability to join things virtually when you can't be there in person and to have events that are designed consciously to be extended digitally. Like it's going to be amazing. And I hope that they're already happening. And I'm actually curious if anyone listening to this has been to such an event, has experienced the sorts of things that Justin and I are talking about with this Live at the Waldorf event series. So hit us up, because these conversations about conversations only really happen if you keep that chain going.
Oh, man.
Jump on Twitter. You can hit us up at BWI Unlocked and use that hashtag TechTheaterCH to tell us about the hybrid event experiences that you've been having.
And as Joe mentioned, we do have more shows coming up this fall, which is super exciting. The next one's on September 27th at the Waldorf and in our virtual venue with the Actors Fund. We'd really love to see you there. So you can grab a ticket at bit.ly/theactorsfund. You can even get like a show series pack that's a little cheaper if you want to come to our Maestra show in October. It's going to be amazing and you'll get to see all of the things that we learned from this show that hopefully we improve. We would just really love to have you there, as well as to have you join our Clubhouse conversations on Tuesdays at 12:55 Eastern. We'd love for you to raise your hand, jump in, and share your thoughts.
Yeah, and if you have a topic you'd like to discuss with these amazing, like-minded individuals on Clubhouse, you can have a show in our Broadway Unlocked Club. You can just visit broadwayunlocked.com/ch and you can pitch your idea.
Every single topic we've talked about has been inspired by the articles we read and share in our company Slack, as well as the people on our stages. So please tweet us at TechTheaterCH, slide into all the DMs, and join in the conversation. Until then, we will see you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.